This is Talking Business. I'm joined now by Ani Selvaraja, CEO of Bell Direct. G'day, Ani. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's just talk a little firstly about Bell Direct. It's a stockbroker, an online broker, set up as part of Bell Potter Securities, which in turn is a part of the Bell Financial Group. The antecedents of Bell Potter go back to Ian Potter and Company, 1928. Is the history of the firm still a part of of daily life at Bell Potter and Bell Direct?
It is. Colin Bell now is our chairman and is still involved in the business on a day-to-day basis, and Colin's two brothers are also involved. So there is a lot of history in the business. We've been in stockbroking for close to 40 years, so a lot of traditional focus on clients and focus on stockbroking.
Yeah, and you were a part of setting up Bell Direct 10 years ago. Now, that was quite early for an online broker. What was it like in those days?
Well, it was a market that was dominated by the banks, even way back when. So our four competitors at that point were, CommSec, Westpac, NAB, and E-Trade under the ANZ ownership. So it was an interesting time. We felt there was some opportunity to disrupt that little group of competitors. And 11 years on, I think we've done that quite successfully.
It's interesting. You actually spent some time at CommSec. Between 2005, 2006, then you went into business banking at the CBA.
Yes.
But it would seem you possibly didn't like banking and you went back into stockbroking.
Well, the markets are substantially more interesting than vanilla banking. So, yes, I went back into broking. As I said, I think there was, I saw a real opportunity. I think there was a competitor set back in 2007 where prices were high. Globally, prices had come down in stockbroking, but it hadn't happened in Australia. But while prices were high, the service offering and the service quality was still low. So we saw a real opportunity to disrupt the market, attacking both those elements and really keeping the client center of what we were trying to do.
So has it worked out? What sort of market share have you picked up?
We're about 5-7% market share at the moment, depending on the segment of client. But certainly, the target outcomes, which were to readjust market pricing, but also improve service at the same time, which, at the time, generally higher service is associated with higher pricing. But we use technology and we use some process smarts, I suppose, to try and attack both those things at the same time. And about 6 years into our journey, we started winning awards in the industry and awarded by the industry for customer service. And for the last 5 years, I've actually been named number one in overall customer satisfaction. So we think we've achieved what we started to do.
But is 5-7% market share enough? Is that what you was that the business plan?
It was certainly the business plan to get to that level. What's happened, though, in the meantime is the market over the last 10 years contracted a little bit. It's now back on the growth trajectory, but certainly, we continue to look for growth and we continue to expand the business. When we launched 11 years ago, we took a completely different perspective and decided to build all our own technology. So we're the only online broker in the country that owns all its own technology. So our cost base is substantially different. So we don't need to achieve the higher levels of market share to be profitable, and we've been able to prove that, Alan.
And you were, as you say, you were disrupting the bank-owned brokers when you started mm-hmm. with lower prices. And I think since then, others have come in with even lower prices. Are you finding yourselves being disrupted now as well?
There are one or two offerings out there with lower prices, but we've been able to maintain our share because of the higher service level that we offer. So, we are focused on the client and understanding really deeply what they want from a broker. So we tend to keep our clients on that basis.
And what do you think is going to happen now with after the Royal Commission?
Well, it's an interesting time, isn't it? So there is a lot of disaggregation going on in the market at the moment. A lot of the banks have announced divestments of their wealth businesses. At the same time,
does that include those divestments? Will they include their stockbroking arms?
No, they've opted to retain those parts of their business. I think mainly because they see those businesses as kind of cash generators, whereas we see this business quite differently in that it's really an opportunity to help clients grow their wealth.
Yeah. So, but it's not just the sort of the Royal Commission and what's going on there. It's also technology has been coming into this area with, in particular, robo-advice and artificial intelligence and so on. To what extent is that changing the industry?
Certainly, robo-advice has changed the landscape in terms of the technology capability. But what we've seen happen in the US is that despite the technology making it easier for clients to invest, it still requires some kind of know-how and knowledge for those clients to be comfortable to invest. So what's happening in the US is that robo-technology is being coupled with an advice model to make the advice model more efficient and to help clients still get better investment outcomes. So I think that will play out here in the same way, and that robo will really be coupled with advice and increase the efficiency of how advice will be delivered to clients.
So do you have to do some of that yourself? I mean, when you talk about your service offering and you've been number one for the last 5 years, a lot of that presumably has to do with the advice that you provide clients and the research. But are you having to add to that a sort of an automatic robotic advice service as well?
Yeah, so we have two parts of the business. There is the part of the business which is focused on retail self-directed clients. And we don't provide advice in that context, but we do provide them research and tools. We have a second part of the business which is targeting independent financial advisors. So we're certainly deploying those robo advice type tools in that marketplace to help advisors create more efficient outcomes for clients. Ultimately, we'll also look to do that in the retail space. We're really doing some deep dive analysis into that segment of the market. And what we've found, Alan, is that through the last 10 years, through the GFC, clients have moved into a segment which we call the middle segment, away from advice, but also slightly more less comfortable with investing themselves. So there is a large segment of clients in the middle who are looking for some help and looking for some knowledge and know-how. And we're looking closely at that segment to understand how we might be able to help them get back on their journey to create wealth.
That's interesting. You're saying that these middle segment people, they want help, but they don't want an advisor. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So there's kind of three core characteristics that we're finding of this middle segment. There's a high loss aversion. So they're very worried about losing money, as we all are. There's also a lack of know-how, so they're looking for someone to actually help them to understand how to invest, what to invest in. But they're very cynical about advice. They find it difficult to understand the value proposition of advice. So there's two things that to be done there. One, we need to help them understand investing a bit better. But I think the advice industry needs to also revisit how it sells its value proposition to these types of clients.
Does that mean you have to change your charging model? Because obviously, you're mainly, as a stockbroker, you're mainly about transaction charging per trade and so on. Are you having to also now charge for advice?
I think everything's up for grabs. So we're spending a lot of time talking to clients, understanding how they want to be communicated to, how they want to be educated, and also how they want to pay. So the good news is they all believe that they should pay, but they just need to understand what the value proposition is and have transparency to what those fees and charges are.
Yeah. Apparently, you've got some interesting views on cryptocurrencies. What do you think of what's going on there? Actually, nobody talks about cryptocurrencies anymore, but do you think that they're here to stay?
I think as an investor, and we always try to think through these things, through the lens of our clients. So I think as an investor, you need to separate your investment portfolio from your punting portfolio. And I think cryptos and CFDs and products like that are very much in that punting bucket. So I think as investors, it's just a matter of understanding what you're doing and understanding how you separate those two buckets of money. I'm not a big fan of those products. That's no secret. But I know that there are clients who will seek to use them, but purely from a punting perspective. So as long as we keep our clients safe and away from those types of products, I'm comfortable in terms of what we provide in our business.
I suppose to an extent it highlights the dual nature of your business, which is, you know, as a broker, you're keen on people trading a lot, you know, doing lots of transactions, which basically involves punting. To some extent, but on the other hand, you're looking after investors and their long term investing interests.
That's exactly right. And one of the things that we're very focused on is to actually help investors think a bit differently about investing, and rather than treat the share market as a casino. So we are focused on long term wealth creation, and that's really a part of the work we're doing around that middle segment and understanding how the average Australian wants to invest and how they think about investing.
And where do you think the whole industry is going to end up next year after the Royal Commission reports? Do you think that it will end up being a revolution?
I think it'll be a revolution over time, so it'll probably evolve into that end position. I think that the next wave of the internet and of technology generally is about open architecture. Technology has now improved to a point where integration between businesses and between products is a lot easier than it used to be, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. So I think there'll be an ability for organisations to bring the best of breed providers together to deliver a service offering to clients which will ultimately solve all of their needs rather than part of their needs. So that's really how we think the industry will evolve.
Very interesting. Thanks very much for joining us, Arnie. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Thanks, Alan.
I've been talking to Arnie Selvaraja, who's the CEO of Bell Direct.